to warnings now that apparently we're unable to retire comfortably unless we've saved something like $800,000 to top up the pension. At least that's if you want a so-called choices lifestyle and you live in a city. The latest retirement expenditure guidelines say that this is what is required to experience a comfortable retirement over and above the pension. This work is done annually by the organisation we're about to speak to, the New Zealand Financial Education and Research Centre, and the guidelines use Stats New Zealand data. They calculate what retirees currently spend to maintain either a no-frills retirement or a choices lifestyle retirement that includes some luxuries. Some luxuries could include buying new plants to plant in the garden, all the way up to overseas travel. The guidelines calculate that an extra $809,000 over and above the pension would be needed to fund your choices lifestyle for a couple living in a city, and $511,000 for a couple living in the regions. The report author, Associate Professor Claire Matthews, is from the Massey Business School, where the guidelines were produced, and is with me now. Kia ora and welcome, Claire.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Can you explain how you do these guidelines, please?
Okay, it's slightly technical, although fortunately Stats do all the work for me, Stats New Zealand. So we take the data from the Household Economic Survey each that comes out every 3 years. And what Stats New Zealand do is take the data for the households in the survey where New Zealand Super is one of the incomes going into that household, which indicates that somebody in the household is retired, or sorry, is over the age of 65, which we generally consider the age of retirement. And then they put those households into quintiles, which is 20% groups. So they and then they take the average expenditure for each of those quintiles. And we use the second quintile, which is those at 21 to 40% in the rankings. They are the no-frills group. And the choices is the fourth quintile, which is the 61 to 80% group.
How much is the amount needed as a nest egg in each of these groups gone up over the decade or so you've been producing them?
Yeah, it certainly has gone up. And it does vary according to the to whether you've got a one or a person, two-person households, and we do just look at the one and two-person households, recognising that there may be others, but that's the bulk of the households. Depends whether you're living in what we term provincial metro, and metro is Auckland, Wellington and Christchurch cities, and also, again, whether you want that no-frills or choices, and it varies from around 75,000 up to just over 800,000 in the most recent report.
Yes, I'm trying to get an indication of the percentage increase over a decade, how much it's gone up.
Sorry, that off the top of my head, I don't know.
A lot?
Yeah, so I can't. A reasonable amount, yes. But the amounts have always been at a point where for the at the top end that they've been large enough that people say it sounds like a big amount.
What by itself does New Zealand Super allow for?
By itself, New Zealand Super will cover your basic living costs. It will cover your food. It will cover your accommodation. Although if you are in rental accommodation, it's likely that you will, given where rents are in New Zealand at the moment, it's likely that you will require the accommodation supplement as well. And while it will cover your food and your power, and again, acknowledging that power, you get a those on New Zealand Super get that winter payment top up at the moment, then it will cover those basic living expenses, but at a what I would call a fairly fundamental level. So you're not necessarily going to be able to buy a whole lot of food treats, for example. It's going to provide you with food that's going to provide you with a basic sustenance level, but not necessarily a huge amount of other things. So it's a basic lifestyle is what it will provide. Bearing in mind that every time these reports come out, I get a number of emails from people saying, well, we live quite comfortably on New Zealand Super. And it's possible, but they're mostly going to be in their own home. They may be growing their own vegetables, things like that. So there's things you can do to eke out your New Zealand Super, but it's going to be what I would term a basic lifestyle, which is not necessarily what most people are looking for in their retirement years.
The two-person provincial households living the no-frills lifestyle come close to being funded by New Zealand Super. They still would require savings of $75,000, according to your calculations, but it's nothing like $800,000. A metro two-person household with a no-frills lifestyle would require savings of $195,000 at retirement. You just mentioned something really important. National Super was based on having your own mortgage-free accommodation and retirement home in retirement. Now, this is increasingly a dream for generations coming through, and even the number of people retiring now, still with a mortgage or renting, is on the rise. How worrying is that?
Oh, it is quite a concern, certainly for me, in terms of looking at where retirees are going to be in the future, because we're telling you what New Zealand retirees currently are spending, but the reality is a lot of those people, you know, a significant proportion of those people are in their own home, don't have a mortgage, and therefore that does provide a certain level of comfort. Some of the previous reports have looked at the impact, and if you're going to still be renting or perhaps have a mortgage, then there is an additional lump sum that's required, and you're talking several hundred thousand on top of that to cover the accommodation costs if you're not in your own mortgage-free home.
How much of an impact is the KiwiSaver, gosh, it's getting on for 15 years old now, I think, at least. How much of an impact is that having on people's prospects of saving a decent nest egg?
Yes, KiwiSaver turns 15 this year. I think it's starting to have an impact because it takes time for KiwiSaver balances to build up, but now that we're getting 15 years worth of savings, I would expect that we are starting to see balances that will be making a difference to people's retirement. Equally, over that time, there have been one or two things like the global financial crisis quite early, now the pandemic, that have affected people's financial situation and therefore led to them potentially withdrawing their savings. So that will be having an impact for some people. But we should be starting to see people with KiwiSaver having a lump sum that will make a difference to their retirement and give them a more comfortable retirement than they would have had otherwise.
It's quite a critical time, this, with the cost of housing, isn't it? And I've been reading again, and we were talking last year to Jeremy Sutton, the family lawyer, the cost of separating perhaps in midlife or later in life and then trying to get in a position of owning your own home by retirement. There are many challenges hitting multiple generations at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. There's all sorts of things going on, and the rise in house prices, which is making it so difficult to get into your first home. My eldest son was fortunate in that he bought his first house 5 years ago, and he managed to scrape enough together to get into it. Based on what that same house is worth today, he would be really struggling to pull together the deposit and then to meet the loan repayments that would be required to buy it today. So that's just in 5 years, and that's really causing a major issue for our first home buyers. But that's also why it is important that I think it's a good idea that KiwiSaver balances can be withdrawn to assist you into your first home, because there is a real advantage in going into retirement in your own home.
Is it premised on you living in your own home? This is some of these sums, and perhaps living through till 90, retirement at age 65. I understand that's the basis that Stats New Zealand works on it. Are we seeing a change, though? Are we seeing more people going into different living arrangements in older age, whether it's into retirement villages or other kinds of arrangements other than their own home?
So just to clarify, it's not Stats New Zealand that have set the 90-year age that's been used for the calculations. That's a decision we've made in terms of pulling the report together.
Understood.
To provide an age that should be long enough that most people won't get there, which sounds terrible, but it's about making sure that the funds won't run out before you do, basically.
The check to the undertaker bounces, yes?
That's right. I was asking whether
it factors in that people may be making different, increasingly making different arrangements about where they're living later in life.
It's factoring that into the extent that if the retirees that are contributing to the survey have got those other living arrangements, then that's going to feed in. But we don't know any of the detail about what people are doing. So we don't know whether people, we know that there are households that have only one person or two people in them, but we don't know, if there is another person, who that other person is. There's kind of an assumption that it's a spouse or partner, but it may not be. It may be a dependent child or an independent child that happens to be living with the person. And we're ignoring at this stage any households that have more than three people because it's such a small number, and because once you get over that, there's so much variety available. So we're not going to be capturing the rest home. Inhabitants, residents, that's a much better word, residents, etc. So at the moment, it's not capturing all that, and it would be helpful to have a better understanding of the different types of living arrangements that people have.
We mentioned people's changing situations with respect to mortgage-free at retirement, which is becoming increasingly, unfortunately, difficult to achieve. The other factor, I guess, is the number of New Zealanders who literally live payday to payday. And, surveys done on this as well, possibly by your people, don't have enough in savings to deal with a car breaking down. What's your message out of this? It's not to terrify people. I guess it's to inform, and perhaps especially younger people or people hitting middle age, inform them realistically about what their options are or their realities are. But what's the bigger message, Claire?
You're right. It's about informing these people. And we don't want to scare them. I know it does tend to have that effect, but that's not the intention. It's about saying this is what, this is where the retirees are currently. So this is achievable. But you need to think about it. And fundamentally, one of the key issues is you do have to plan for retirement. The phrase that's come out in the last 6 months or so is talking about sleepwalking into retirement. And that's what you can't afford to do. You can't just afford to work, pay your bills, and even contribute to KiwiSaver and just assume that when you get to retirement, it's all going to be fine. You actually have to be planning. And sadly, you do need to be planning basically from the day you start your first job. And one, it makes it a lot easier to save those large amounts if you're saving from your first day. Two, it's actually easier to save if you save from the time you start working, because if you start paying yourself right from the beginning, and that's what we talk about in terms of saving is paying yourself. If you're doing that right from the beginning of working life, then you don't ever think about that money that's going to savings because you've never had it. And so you learn to manage on generally. I mean, there are exceptions and I acknowledge that, but generally you will learn to manage without that money because you never see it. It's never part of your disposable income. So it's about the planning. It's about doing things early, but it's also about saying it's actually never too late. You may not get quite to that end point that you were aiming for, but if you start at some point, then you're going to get part of the way there. The earlier you start, the better, but it's never too late to start.
Ngamihi Claire Matthews. Well, for lived experience, we welcome Mel Stone, who is a retiree in Palmerston North and well into your retirement years, I think, Mel, although still working a bit. Do you want to give us some wisdom from your experience? Welcome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hi, good morning. Sure, well, I'm now 76, so I've been retired a number of years. I actually took early retirement at 60 years old because back in my day, a long time ago, was actually compulsory to retire at 60 in my job. So we were well on the way to planning retirement at 60 when the law changed, and of course you can work till any age now. And then when I did finally get to 65, I enjoyed the little bit of part-time work I did, so I've continued to do so.
What have you experienced when it comes to having a bit of a nest egg and then living on the pension, but being able to live, the sort of life you want to live?
Yeah, well, we were very, very fortunate, our generation. We were taught to save by our parents. And we had to save to buy things because no credit cards back in our day. So if you didn't have the money, you didn't buy anything. That was the way it was. So we were always probably reasonably frugal and still enjoyed life. When we got to retirement age, we'd built up quite a nice nest egg Of course, as I say, that gave us the opportunity to take early retirement and make that choice.
What's your recommendations for, I guess, anyone listening now? As you mentioned, the generations are all experiencing different things. And from what you've learned, what's the advice you would give to people listening out there now who are a bit terrified, I guess, by the prospect of needing to have so much on top of the pension?
Yeah, well, it's just a problem to really decide what you really need, because it's changing all the time. And I guess a lot of people who had money invested in high interest bank deposits around 8%, now suddenly getting only 1%. So their income's virtually reduced to nothing, and they're watching their capital deflate very quickly. So, you know, there's so many. I was just listening to Claire, and she obviously said a lot of sensible things. But I would say you've just got to start saving as early as possible and decide on what sort of lifestyle you want to lead. Do you want to travel? Do you want to go out for a coffee every second day and dine out? Or are you just happy to stay at home?
Mel, thanks very much for being with us too. Mel Stone, and thanks to Claire Matthews, who was with us there earlier, who annually produces these reports, Retirement Expenditure Guidelines. She's Associate Professor at the Massey Business School.